Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show, Monday through Friday,
on the Athletic Podcast Network.
For this beautiful game of basketball that we all love and talk about every single day.
With Sam Amick.
To be able to bring people together. What do you do, baby?
Reportedly at the center of an NBA investigation
into tampering accusations.
And the message to executives in the league is
stop talking about players on other teams.
What did I do?
The charges filed.
Impermissible contact.
Was right or wrong?
Tampering charges are really difficult to prove.
You know me, I talk.
Kind of awkward to even talk about it. I can't even mention Deans anymore.
Actually, what I like to play with Kevin Durant.
The trial you want with tampering.
They're always ahead of the rules.
It's not rocket science.
Hey, we don't like I tamper with the guys.
I didn't tamper. I'm just telling you what happened.
Welcome to the Tampering Podcast, part of the Athletic NBA Show. I am here with the one and only Lakers owner, Jeannie Buss, and I'm glad that we're doing Zoom so that I could see Jeannie shaking her head as I rattle off the name of this podcast. Jeannie, you have no idea how long I've waited to share this tampering moment with you. How are you doing today?
Can you please just give me a little background as to why it's called the Tampering Podcast? I would think that would really make people hesitant about joining me. It made me second guess my own decision.
Oh, man. So first of all, you should know you're definitely not the first owner to come on. So other folks have gotten over this tampering fear. I got to be genuine with you because you and I have known each other quite a long time. You know, there was a moment not that long ago in the NBA when, I mean, tampering from all angles was a hot topic and the type of thing we talked about all the time. And so this podcast and kind of the identity and the way it was formed was supposed to be kind of the behind the scenes stuff, the maybe the not so sanitized version of NBA coverage. And so that's what inspired it. We might need to refresh the intro. Again, I'm just going to own it. The intro might have the one and only Magic Johnson kind of highlighted. So that's maybe something that you're trying to put in your past. So there's a lot here. But thank you for getting through all that and joining me. The timing couldn't be better. We haven't talked officially on the record in a while, and we are 2 days removed from, you know, your beloved franchise getting back to the NBA Finals for the first time in 10 years. So just very simply and directly, what was that like for you to see happen? It's a long time coming, and you know, you spent your entire life being used to your team being on this stage. What, you know, how did it hit you?
Well, what's unusual is, first of all, to be playing basketball, playoff basketball, during this time period. Normally in September, we would be, you know, previewing the season and talking about, you know, what the possibilities were. And so for me, the game that actually clinched the Western Conference Finals victory fell on my birthday. And that kind of became the
happy belated birthday, by the way.
You know, thank you. And for our team, it was, you know, just, you know, how much they, the players and the coaches wanted me to know that it was something to celebrate my birthday. So it really took on a different meaning with, you know, the distance, me being in LA and them being in the bubble in Orlando. It was kind of a moment of humanity and, you know, remembering what it's like to have family. And certainly, it's been a long time, since we were in the finals. And I couldn't be more proud. I think that this season is extraordinary and it's been fragile. And the sacrifices that the players and the coaching staff and all the training staff that have been separated from their pets, their home. Some have had loved ones come in to the bubble. So, you know, it's been a huge sacrifice, which makes it even that much more special. So I'm thrilled that we are in the finals. I think they're very, you know, serious about it, not going overboard and over celebrating a conference final win. they want to keep going. They want to keep the winning going.
Right. I'm curious, and we haven't talked offline about this at all, because you're not out here yet. I believe you're going to be coming in a couple of days. What is the viewing experience like for you? What is your routine and your habit? And in that clinching game, you know, especially being your birthday, you know, if you can share, like, where are you? Who are you with? You know, how are you taking it all in?
I'm at my house by myself. I mean, we have this cool option that fans can be part of a virtual wall. And I just couldn't think about doing that because you have to kind of sit still the entire right. game. And I can't sit right. still the entire game. And I think the game winner from, you know, earlier in the round by Anthony Davis, when he made that shot, and I let out a scream that I didn't even know I was capable of. And my dog just looked at me like, what is happening right now? So, you know, I think I share that experience with Laker fans, and through social media, we're able to kind of watch the game together by interacting in real time. So we've just all kind of made the best of it. But certainly I miss, seeing people at Staples Center, high-fiving, hugging, you know, things that we have really, you know, I don't know when that is going to happen again, what next season will look like. But I'm just so proud of the job that they've done and continue to do by the commitment they've made to being in the bubble and making Laker fans proud back home.
Well, and I think to add on to that, the part that I'm sure if I was in your shoes that you would appreciate about the way your team has handled the experience in the biggest moments and AD's shot being bigger than any, you know, in the post-game media, it's so interesting, Jeannie, because you'll see the excitement and the euphoria on the court. The guys enjoy each other in the locker room afterwards, but the energy is different and it kind of diffuses more quickly because there's no fans. And then during the media, your guys have often said, like LeBron more than anybody, that, you know, this was great, but man, I wish it was at Staples. And, you know, it would have been crazy if it was at Staples. That part, yeah, and they're dead on. It would have been wild. I do credit the league. Like you said, the bubble's going very well. The basketball, honestly, has been tremendous. I think, no travel has helped these players quite a bit, getting their rest, you know, having time to focus on the game. So a lot of great stuff coming out of here. Let's take a second to hit the rewind button, because I'm watching this game the other night and I'm thinking to myself that in my years of covering the NBA going back to 2004, I really cannot remember a turnaround, not just in terms of a team going from struggling on the court to getting to the NBA finals, but in terms of the interpersonal dynamics and everything that has gone on with your franchise in the last 17 months. And I'm going to start with, I was hoping that you could kind of share insight on your relationships with some of the people that have been the most important to this season. But Frank Vogel is a guy who, when he got hired, you know what the narrative was in the media, that he was not the first pick and the Ty Lue situation didn't work out. And was it going to be Monty Williams? And then, you know, Frank has his press conference on the day where Magic, and it was unfortunate that that was the day he's on ESPN, you know, kind of being pretty tough on Rob Pelinka. Mm-hmm. To go from that to Frank wishing you happy birthday as this team gets to the NBA Finals is just remarkable. How does all of that land with you?
I think it's really a credit to the people, in the front office, the inner circle. We knew that, when Magic stepped down from his position with the Lakers, that, I still am not exactly clear why and why it had to be that day. We knew that the outside world would be questioning everything that we were doing, and that we just had to kind of let it roll off our backs and just do the work. And we knew that takes time. And, going through the coaching search, And, you know, identifying great candidates like Monty Williams, who, you know, the Phoenix Suns ended up hiring before we were through with our process. And I think he's proven to be a great head coach. And really, that showed in the bubble, you know, early on. Then, you know, in our process, then Juwan Howard, we met with him.
Right.
Ty Lue, Frank Vogel, and really for what we were trying to do, Frank was the perfect fit. And you know, it was, you know, again, going through that summer was really difficult because everybody, all the speculation, all the innuendo, and you know, it really doesn't serve you to, you know, defend yourself. You know, people, you know, it did seem like, you know, what was going on. And the only thing that would ever really write would be the work and the body of work, the evidence of work. And so, you know, we just stuck our heads down. And, you know, I think the Anthony Davis trade was important. It was difficult. I think probably for me, the hardest thing in this business is trading away players. But in order to get a player of the value and the talent of Anthony Davis, you have to give up value and talent. And so we had to let, you know, Lonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram and Josh Hart and the number four pick to get Anthony. And you know, it was really the right thing for us to do, because when you have somebody like LeBron James and where he is at his career, you got to go all in. And, you know, we then went through free agency, which was a little odd just because decisions were being, you know, kind of stretched long. And but I think we recovered well from the delay. And, you know, the roster that Rob Pelinka put together really is now, you're now seeing what the vision was, because it is a versatile team that can go big, can go small. That doesn't really show until you're in the playoffs. Well, we hadn't been in the playoffs for so long. It was really hard to see what the vision was and where we were going. But now that we're in the playoffs, you can see how the versatility of the lineups, and you know, and that's really a testament to our front office and being led by Rob Pelinka.
Well, and within that, and you kind of hit on it, you know, that again, the turnaround's remarkable. And the Magic component in particular, you know, the other day when you guys get to the finals, you are jumping on Twitter and giving Magic love for the part that he played in this whole process. I think anybody outside looking in sees that and says, wow, now that's quite a thing to find a way to go from, you know, him kind of wandering the halls of the Staples Center looking for you after he's announced to the world that he's leaving, to you deciding to kind of, you know, take the high road and give him credit. I mean,
well, you have to really look back to, because I know basketball wise, the timing might have seemed odd, but you have to really look back to when he joined us and what was going on with the organization. And that was when there was a challenge to the management that, you know, my brother Jim was in charge of basketball, and he had hired a group of lawyers that were trying to unseat me and put the team kind of in chaos. And so that had to be dealt with. And, you know, it's not something really that the fans want to hear about. They don't care about that, the boardroom kind of stuff. But if Magic hadn't have come back and stabilized everything under his leadership, because that's what we needed. We needed somebody that was going to come in who everybody knew loves the Lakers more than anybody on earth, and would never allow anything to happen with the Lakers. That him coming on board gave us the stability so that we could resolve the boardroom issues and get back to getting the Lakers back on track to what Dr. Buss built, you know, over 40 years ago.
Right, right. Jeannie, on a personal level, I wonder also, you know, we're sitting here talking today about a very happy time for you in the Lakers history, and you're glad to be back on the final stage. How, I don't want to over-dramatize anything here, but I mean, this has got to be one of the toughest stretches for you of your life. Because you, if you go back to mid-April of last year, you have the Lakers chaos that you don't want to ever be kind of the reality for your franchise. You know, then in October, you have the China-Hong Kong situation that was really challenging for your team. You know, LeBron in particular, I wrote a tough column about him at the time and how he handled some of the messaging within that situation. You know, it gets worse from there. You lose your mother not that long after that. You know, David Stern dies on New Year's Day, and then Kobe and Gianna and the other seven other victims in the helicopter crash. It's unfathomable stuff. And then you're chipping away at it, trying to fix the franchise in the process. Take me through that a little bit.
Like you said, it's hard to imagine that we're now coming on a year ago that we started this season when the team left for China. And certainly that was a situation that was unfortunate that, you know, as, you know, this kind of, I don't really know how to explain it. Just, you know, the Chinese government taking offense to one of the NBA executives, you know, sending out a tweet. And, you know, we were the team that was landing in China as this was unfolding. So it kind of put our team right in the center of a storm that was none of our doing. And yet we had to bear the brunt of that backlash. And, you know, it was a difficult way to start a season. And, it just, you know, added to the challenge of, you know, a new coaching staff, you know, a bunch of new players and trying to get things going for the expectations that we had set on ourselves. And we're in a unique situation because we share a market with another team. New York has the same, you know, thing
dynamic
as us. Is there's the other teams don't deal with that. So, you know, we kind of had this, kind of challenged by even in our own market, who was going to be the team that would, be the most successful on the court. So, it was a lot of heavy weight. And again, you know, really it was about doing the work and about this excellent coaching staff that we put together that brought, so many different great minds of basketball, Lionel Hollins, Jason Kidd, Phil Handy, supporting Frank Vogel and, you know, his vision of how he wanted the team to be. And so it really is, as they say, you got to play the games to, you know, show, you know, the work. And so we were, feeling the success, and then tragedy on top of tragedy, losing my mother, losing David Stern, and then, of course, our beloved Kobe Bryant and his daughter, Gianna. And, an unusual, nobody could predict that. And it still hurts. It's still fresh. And, you know, and it was important that we as a team take time. We asked the league to postpone a game that we were supposed to play because it hit our team really deeply. And they were in no presence of mind to be able to play and be safe on the court, being so full of emotion and trying to process what was happening. And, I'm so proud of what the resiliency that this team has shown under all these circumstances that have been put on them and added to them, and the strength of our leadership, with LeBron James at the top, being the captain of the team and being the leader, has brought us closer together. And I couldn't be more proud of how they've represented Laker Nation.
I mean, as we sit here talking, I can see behind you, you've got Andy Bernstein's great book with Kobe, and obviously his presence is going to be all around your world. What did it mean to you, though, that when your team gets to the playoffs, even on the media side, Jeannie, we reporters had some discussions about, we were curious, because of the season stoppage, that emotionally for the Lakers, I understand the idea of kind of carrying Kobe's spirit with you and having it be part of the season. But when you had, such a long delay, I thought it was interesting psychologically, like, can you still carry that with you, or are you kind of starting fresh? And your team made it pretty clear when they got here that they still break huddles, talking about Kobe. They still talk about him internally. The peak of that is when AD hits that shot in game two. I mean, that part, you can't write a better script. He turns and yells Kobe's name because of your longtime friendship and relationship with Kobe. That stuff had to make you smile.
And when you said like you wouldn't write a better script, like this wasn't created. This wasn't something like, oh, the front office is now going to dedicate the season. This is completely organic. This is coming from the heart. You can't write this because this is who these players are. And I know what my relationship was with Kobe and how generous he was with his advice and his support, of me personally. I didn't realize how much he gave to so many other people, of his time, of his wisdom. And, when you have, the winner of the U.S. Open talking about, her conversations with Kobe and how he inspired her and people in other sports, in other countries. And, this is, who Kobe was and the reflection of how many lives he's touched and will continue to touch, because I don't think that his grieving this loss is felt by everybody. Like, we all lost somebody who was a giving person and stood for what somebody can accomplish with a mindset and a person that will be willing to do the work and work harder than everybody else and continue to push and challenge themselves. So that those lessons that he taught us and what he stood for won't disappear in time. And, he will forever be part of this franchise, however it will be represented.
We started with 22 teams heading down to Orlando, and now we are down to the final two. That's right. Basketball's final two teams are set to square off to see who will be crowned basketball's champion. And there's no better place to get in on all the action than DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy sports. To celebrate basketball's championship, DraftKings will have millions of dollars in total prizes up for grabs all week long. So get in on all the action now. If you haven't tried it yet, fantasy basketball is easy to play. Just pick six players, stay under the salary cap, and pile up points for three-pointers, rebounds, assists, and more. No better way to put your basketball knowledge to the test than to compete at a shot for millions of dollars. With millions of dollars up for grabs this week, there's no better place to have skin in the game than with DraftKings. Download the DraftKings app now and use the promo code RUN to get a free shot at millions of dollars up for grabs this week with your first deposit. That's promo code RUN to get a free shot at millions of dollars with your first deposit. Only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Let's take another step back and talk about the internal dynamics and workings of your franchise, something you and I have talked about a lot in the past. And honestly, it, to me, it's like, listen, if we're going to be critical in times when it's not going very well, then we need to, you know, flip that the other way and highlight it when it does appear to be going a lot better than before. And I'm talking about synergy. I'm talking about trust. You know, in the past, these were things that were not in a good place with your group. And I think your fans, even though they know a lot about how you guys operate, I think there's still some mystery and kind of curiosity about, you know, whose voices are in the room, how they are all working together. Even out here in the bubble, you know, Kurt Rambis being on site is telling of the role that Kurt is now playing as an advisor. And you know, I think you probably agree, advisor is it's a very general title. I mean, Kurt has a significant voice. And obviously his wife, Linda, your friend, lifelong friend, you know, Rob Pelinka and his part all the way through, because you already hit on it earlier, back when your brother was in the front office and Mitch Kupchak, you had factions, you had, it wasn't functioning the way that I know you wanted it to. How do you feel overall about all of these pieces coming together? And, you know, do you still have progress to make on that front, or has that stuff been fixed?
You know, I think that, you know, we had, there were too many voices that were, you know, too many leaks, too many people talking and not being on the same page. And so we took the off season to shore those things up and to, you know, we like to collaborate together to be on the same page. It doesn't mean just a bunch of people agreeing to for the sake of agreeing. We like to hash things out, debate, you know, just work through. So yes, you the people that I rely on, that I trust, Rob leading our front office, Kurt Rambis being an advisor, Linda Rambis, who I've worked with for over 30 years. You know, these are the people that I trust, and then bringing on a coaching staff that reflected those beliefs and that level of collaboration. And, you know, it's every team is set up differently. Nobody has a secret formula or, you know, a patented formula that everybody has to follow and how they set up their front office. But for the vision of what we want Laker basketball to be, which is the Laker basketball that Dr. Buss really kind of, you know, made a successful formula, is you know, the touch points of what we're trying to recreate and you know, bring back Laker basketball as the people who have supported us were used to, and the product that we had given them for 5 or 6 years was not what Laker basketball was supposed to be. And when you know, bait and switch with your customers who have supported you, there's an understanding why Laker fans weren't happy, why the media was questioning what was going on, who's in charge, you know, all these different voices and factions. And I believe we have brought everybody under the same umbrella and working in concert with each other and, you know, building something that people can see what, you know, why the decisions that are being made complement the decision before, that things are being done as we're building, and that's paid off.
I wonder, during that whole process, you know, I know that you pay attention to the conversation in the media. And I wonder if there might have been times when you know, watched something on TV or read something or heard something whether it was criticism or just analysis that landed with you to where you find yourself saying, yeah, we do need to do this specific thing better. And the one I'm thinking of is to see Rob, you know, rightly so, get a lot of credit now for the way the roster was built and the versatility you mentioned earlier. When you made that choice to put Rob in there, there were a lot of people who felt like, in terms of best hiring practices, that you should go out and get the best executive, not necessarily the best executive with personal ties to your organization. So some of the criticism was kind of the assertion that it wasn't a case of who was the best candidate. It was, you know, more personal dynamics. Now, no better time than as we sit here about for your team to go to the finals that I think you'd probably be comfortable fielding that question. But, you know, that type of conversation that's always going to surround a pro sports owner. What do you think of that?
Well, I understand exactly, you know, it's kind of like the process that we went through in hiring a coach, where we identified candidates, we went through an interview process, we had, you know, what our goals were in terms of the length of contract that would be signed, the budget that would be adhered to, and what the vision that we had. And so we went through that transparent process. When it came to hiring Magic and Rob Pelinka, that was done right before the All-Star break. And had we gone through an interview process, then it would have tipped off what was going to happen. And what, you know, and this is the boring legal stuff, but there was a plan that my brother had about unseating me as the governor to put the Lakers in chaos, meaning there would not be one decision maker because of the way the trust was set up and the board of directors and a lot of complicated legal maneuvering, that there was no way that we couldn't go through a normal process of going through interviews, because it would have tipped off the lawyers and would have, you know, the most important thing was to keep the Lakers stable. And there was a group of people trying to destabilize us. And so things had to be done quickly and swiftly and in order to bring that stability. So Rob, any criticism of Rob Pelinka is unfounded. And he is a brilliant man, a person of high integrity. And he is, you know, his vision of what basketball should be, what Laker basketball should be, is what you're seeing on the court. And, you know, I understand your point about going through a transparent process of doing interviews and bringing people in, but that would have tipped off what, you know, the legal threat that was looming over this franchise. And I was not going to let this franchise go into disarray. That is the conversations that I had with my father, which was he put me in charge and gave me the authority to make the change of letting my brother go. And he expected me to use it to protect the most important thing. You know, I like to say that my dad had his, you know, children, but the Lakers were his baby. And he put me in charge of the baby. And, you know, family ties and that kind of confusing stuff, you know, has to be put aside. And the number one priority is to make the Lakers safe, make them great, and run the franchise the way he envisioned it. And that's what I'm doing.
Right. With that backdrop, is there any part of you that just surprise is the wrong word, but you are talking about a threading the needle type of situation that you had to navigate through, and then to get again from there to here, there's got to be some part of you that is a little struck by the way that you guys have gotten to this place.
yeah, I mean, when I look back at all the different things that have transpired to be here now is really a testament to the people that I trust the most, which are, you know, Rob and Kurt Rambis and Linda Rambis and my younger two brothers, Jesse Buss and Joey Buss. Jesse is the head of our scouting and has done a fantastic job identifying talent like Kyle Kuzma, you know, late in the draft. And, you know, and Joey Buss, who runs our G League team, the South Bay Lakers, and, you know, somebody like Alex Caruso, who was part of our G League team and, you know, continuing to develop his game, has now become an important part of this success. So that it's all those people coming together with a like mind and a like vision and collaborating and building towards something that was together, as opposed to everybody trying to pull, you know, the team in whatever direction they thought was right. And, you know, that is what that's what this organization is about.
Jeannie, I've waited way too long to put LeBron James front and center here. So let's talk about that guy for a second. I've covered him in some capacity since the very beginning. I was actually at his first game in Sacramento, and I was just getting started when it comes to my own NBA career. And that guy was probably 50 pounds lighter than this guy. And, you know, this guy still jumps through the roof. This guy still beats guys down the floor. The way he takes care of his body is incredible. The other night, and this is a little slice of bubble life that you'll appreciate, we were sitting out by the lake the night that your team celebrated, so two nights ago. And the Three Bridges restaurant is where all the teams go to unwind. And listen, I understand this is not a complaint, but media is not allowed over there. So it creates a funny dynamic where us writers are chilling by the lake with our bottle of wine and our laptops getting our work done. And everybody from your team is coming by. Your coach stopped by, you know, one of the nights to say hello. But I see LeBron ride his bicycle over the Three Bridges to the restaurant, drops his bike off at the door. And because, you know, sound carries pretty well over water, you could hear the celebration happening. And so LeBron walks through the room, and you can see that he has the NBA entertainment crew behind him, cameras, boom mics. And when he comes in that room, the place explodes. Everybody's screaming, hey, you know, and welcome. I think somebody yelled, speech, speech, speech. And they're having a great time. But that same night, Mike Mancius, you know, LeBron's career-long trainer, had stopped by our little area to say hello. And it made me think about just the longevity of LeBron and the greatness that he continues to display. But let's get into your relationship with him, because 2 years ago, you and I sat down for a pretty in-depth piece where I tried to look at how you guys landed LeBron. And I remember at the end of the interview asking you just, okay, have you gotten to know this guy yet? What's the relationship? And you kind of smiled and you said, well, he retweeted one of my tweets, you know. And so it was pretty fresh. Like, you guys hadn't really connected. I know that even recently, ESPN's Ramona Shelburne had a good piece where she talked about how 9 months in, you guys finally go to dinner. And certainly things have grown since there. So kind of take me through the LeBron experience through Jeannie Buss's eyes.
You know, he's different than any player that I've ever, you know, watched, how he operates. He's just, you know, I mean, we've had so many great Lakers that I've been around: Magic, Shaq, Kobe, Pau Gasol, you know, Hall of Famers. He's such a strong presence. His leadership is really, it's something so unique. He's fearless, and I feed off that. His strength, like, empowers me, and I'm sure that's how the rest of the team feels. And he's not afraid to face any foe. He's not afraid of, I mean, he's like I said, he's just fearless, and I'm you know, so proud of him. But I think what I most appreciate about him and what I've learned from him is about accountability. And that, you know, there, you know, call the way he can call out hypocrisy or, you know, people who aren't living up to a standard. And that I really appreciate in him, because I think there's a lot of times where people want to shortcut things or want to blame other people or other situations as to why they didn't bring their A game or why they didn't, you know, deliver on a promise. And he's, you know, he delivers on his promise and he expects everybody else to. And when you have a team and the guy who's leading your team holds that standard, then it makes everybody else have to be accountable and live up to what the bar that he set. And he is, I think his priorities about family and about social responsibility have really inspired me and made me really take time to reflect on what we could do better as an organization. And he, you know, hopefully will play, like you said, he takes great care of his body. Excuse me. I hope he plays for many, many more years. But however he, whatever his term is with the Lakers, he has forever left his mark on this team and this organization and on me. And, you know, he is somebody that I treasure and I will protect. And, you know, I have just enjoyed watching him play and nurture along his teammates and bring out the best in them. And he really is the most unique person in the league today. And, you know, I couldn't be more proud that he's a Laker.
I wondered, I mean, did you ever wonder if, because you have this pulse on Lakers Nation and the fan base, and in the beginning, there were the questions of, you know, LeBron, how are you going to ingratiate yourself to this fan base? And then the, you know, the Kobe comparisons that seem like, you know, I wonder, like, is he ever going to feel like he's actually a Laker, or is he just going to be a guy who put on a Lakers jersey? Like, you know, how did you see that, that him kind of finding his way in that space?
You know, when he first came and there was, you know, some, maybe some pushback by some Laker fans or pretend Laker fans, because, you know, my comment was, you know, anyone, any Laker fan that isn't excited about LeBron James being a Laker really isn't a Laker fan. And, you know, I think he's, you know, the relationship, the mutual respect between he and Kobe, and, you know, how he brought Laker Nation together after the loss of Kobe, I think has shown that he is a Laker. And, you know, we have a saying, you know, here we go by the motto, once a Laker, always a Laker. And I think LeBron is a Laker, and he belongs part of our history. And he is bringing this franchise back to where it should be. When I forget exactly which game it was, if it was closing out against Houston, and he brought up my dad's name in his post-game comments. And I was so touched by him, you know, reflecting back on Dr. Buss. And I do believe they met at some point down the line. Somewhere their paths crossed. But, you know, he really has embraced the legacy of the Lakers, the history of the Lakers. When we sat down for dinner, he brought up some things that I was really surprised, because he'd really done research on, you know, what my dad built and the innovations that my dad brought to, you know, which from way before he was ever born, you know, he did a deep dive into Laker history, and I really was
out of curiosity, what was that? What did he bring up?
About the Showtime, how my dad interpreted the game, which, you know, for younger fans, you know, when my dad came in, he was 48 years old when he bought the team. And there was kind of a pushback that maybe when you buy a team, you have to be approved by the other owners. And there were some owners that thought my dad was too young, that he was too outspoken, that he had kind of this, flamboyant lifestyle. And, you know, he was a different guy, wore blue jeans every day.
Right.
And, you know, that was him. And that kind of, you know, like ruffled the feathers of the old guard. And, you know, there was, you know, some talk about not approving him. And, you know, he wanted the games to be more fun. He was a fan before anything else. Like he wanted the games to reflect what he would enjoy. And he was very much about including everybody in the party. Like he wanted everybody to have a good time, from the seats on the floor to the very top seat. And that's where he sat at the Forum. He actually sat what would be seats behind the basket at the very top, next to where the band played, because he knew that if he had a good time there, then every fan was going to have a good time, because those were the furthest seats away, right, the least desirable seats in the arena, and he was going to make that be the spot everybody wanted to be in.
Right.
And it was that kind of interpretation of the game, and that when he wanted the way the lighting was at the Forum that we replicated at Staples Center is kind of like a prize fight where the lights are focused on the game. And then when the team would take a break, he wanted the show to keep going. He didn't want everything to go quiet. So that's when he brought out the Laker girls. And we were the first team to ever have dancers perform. And so it was kind of like he wanted the show to keep going. So when the guys were taking a break, then the girls would take over the center stage, and they would have, you know, it was kind of equal opportunity. Now it's the women that get the focus. And, you know, that was all revolutionary ideas. Now every team in the league has a dance squad. So, the idea that LeBron was curious about, you know, who my dad was and his commitment to wanting the Lakers, you know, he felt that there was an East Coast bias in the media, that fans, everybody focused on the 76ers or the Knicks. And he wanted, the Lakers, he wanted the city that embraced him, because he wasn't from LA, but he made LA his home. He wanted the team the city, the people in LA would be proud of. And so, you know, the team really reflected that. And when, you know, he drafted Magic Johnson, because, you know, and that was kind of a controversial decision, because Magic had to, you know, ask, what was it called? We didn't draft players at 19. It was, usually you didn't want to take chances on younger players. You wanted to draft the 22-year-old kid who played in a four-year university, yep, and gotten that coaching and that development. So it was kind of a risk, but he saw that Magic reflected that flair, that, you know, that ability to entertain and to, you know, make people breathless with some of the plays that he made. And, you know, I just appreciated that LeBron could appreciate who my dad was, and him bringing up his name really, really touched my heart.
Sure. Listen, I'm already over the time that we had talked about, but if you have a couple more minutes, I am curious what your thoughts are on beyond the Lakers. I mean, I'm sitting in a bubble. We have no fans. We don't know what's coming next. Where do you think we're going as a league? I know you're in constant touch with Adam Silver and all the other owners. You guys are having your Zoom calls and trying to read this room and figure out the best approach. Now, you know better than anybody that the lack of fans is obviously devastating organizations across the league economically. And so it seems that there is this discussion about how long can we wait to possibly get some fans back in the building. Because if you can't, and if you have to go and you know, do another bubble or regional bubbles or whatever it might be, you know, that's going to have an extremely significant impact on everybody's bottom line. What's kind of your how do you handicap all this right now?
Well, I mean, it's hard to say. I think that every day brings new information, and I appreciate that, you know, the marching orders from day one was to keep everybody safe. And I believe the decision that Adam Silver made to shut down the league probably saved thousands of lives, because of that decision then made everybody realize how serious this pandemic was, and you know that, you know, there had to be a reaction to you know, keeping people safe and making our players safe. And you know, what next season will look like, I don't know, but I believe that you know, we have great minds at the league office that are bringing information from all different areas. And, you know, hopefully, I mean, the intention is to someday get back to where we can have fans in the seats, but we're not going to do anything that will put anybody at risk. So I think it's a work in progress, and, you know, we'll just see how things go. And you know, the idea that the bubble has worked and that we've been able to complete this season is really a testament to that you know, that mindset, and you know, I couldn't be more proud of the league for leading us through some really tough times.
I wonder for you guys, how significant has it been on, I think we all make the assumption that the Lakers are printing money all day, every day, no matter what, you know what I mean? That's kind of the way that you guys end up getting talked about. And I honestly, and I don't mean to bring this up out of nowhere, I do wonder, is there anything you can shed light on? You guys took some heat for the choice to take the government loan money a while back, and I know you gave it back, and I don't know if you've addressed that. I mean, I feel like from you guys to every squad in the association, there's not a lot of information and clarity about how badly people have been hit. You guys obviously, you know, have taken blows yourself, but what do you think there?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, when we applied for that loan, there wasn't a lot of information. I think it was more out of like, let's just cover all our bases, and that, you know, became a possibility. And certainly as we realized quickly that it wasn't, you know, it wasn't earmarked for an organization like ours. And we gave the money back immediately. It was really just about trying to stay fluid and, you know, not knowing what was coming next, and trying to do whatever we could to, you know, keep going. I mean, I'm in my office right now, but we haven't had our employees here since the shutdown. So, and we have every Laker employee working from home right now. We asked all our top executives, including me, to take a pay reduction, which we did. You know, it's trying to, you know, we don't know what's going to happen next. So we have to stay, you know, we have to stay fluid and make decisions as we go along with the information that we have at hand, and do our best.
Right. All right. Lastly, Jeannie, on the fun stuff, when are you going to miss game one or not miss it? But are you not going to obviously be out here for that one? What's your plan in terms of taking in the finals yourself?
Yeah, I plan to get to Orlando. I have to take a test before I get on a plane. Then I'll be tested every day that we're there. I will be separated from the team where the governor sit, and this isn't a time that people are really meant to travel. And this isn't a time, you know, we all have to be careful and we all have to wear masks and take every precaution that we can to protect each other from spreading the virus. And hopefully we can get it under control. But, everything has to be thought through, and I will do everything to do my part to keep everybody safe.
Well, I look forward to seeing you somewhat in person. I think you're going to be in tier two, which is, you'll see when you get here. It's such a weird dynamic. And I didn't even mention former Laker great Pat Riley and the clash of these two organizations. You're going to see, you will be sitting on one side of tier two and looking down and probably waving at LeBron and Frank and the guys. And then Pat will be on the other side. He sits with Andy Ellisberg, his top front office guy. It's just, I've grown a soft spot for that dynamic, because like when the Heat win games, Jimmy Butler will look up in the stands and point at Pat, and they try to have a moment, through plexiglass and this weird environment that these guys are all in. But should be a fantastic finals. I can't thank you enough for taking all this time. Always great to talk to you. Thank you, Jeannie.
Thank you very much for having me.